Welcome, True Believers. Sean Arama here. So here's something that just popped into my head yesterday. Normally, I kind of pre-plan these podcasts a little bit in advance. Kind of, you know, just get the brain thinking and kind of plan my thought process in advance. And but this one here, I just couldn't pass this one up. What was I listening to? I was listening to a couple of interviews with a couple of people, with a couple of individuals, and I'm a music nerd, as I've admitted in the past. And here's the one thing that came up, and something that doesn't really get talked about very much. So here's what it is. As a drummer, I mean, in terms of being a musician. Being a drummer is pretty much how I define myself musically. I mean, yeah, I do sing, I do dabble in other things, I do songwrite, but I always identify myself first and foremost as a drummer. So, I listen to a lot of different types of music, and a lot of drummers would probably hate me for admitting this, but I do like techno music. And techno, I guess, is probably not even the right term anymore, but electronic music, I guess, you know, psy or trance or drum and bass or whatever. Basically, if something has a really interesting beat, I really, really like it, especially if it's electronic music that isn't just putting a beat and it's the same beat from beginning to the end of the song, and it's 1 hour long song. It's the same beat from beginning to end, or maybe like three beats or four beats, and that's it. I do like something that has an interesting beat that sometimes uses different sounds to do that percussion. So it may not necessarily be a snare drum, but I kind of prefer when they're not using standard drum sounds to create the beat, because otherwise, why not just use the drum set, right? So that being said, I do admire that kind of music. But here's the kinds of music that I guess I'm having trouble wrapping my head around the popularity of. So, I'm trying to express this properly. So, basically, you have a song, basically top 40 radio or whatever. And I don't listen to top 40 radio, but top 40 radio does seep into the fabric of the world, whether you listen to it or not, just because the marketing and the advertising and all that sort of stuff is just so prevalent, and they're basically forcing you to listen to this music. You can't escape it. It's everywhere. Good, whether the music's good or bad is a completely irrelevant point to me. It's just whatever has the biggest advertising campaign behind it seems to be the way it goes. Or if someone's going to talk about something because it's deemed cool, it might not actually be cool, but it's been deemed cool to talk about, and therefore it's cool. You can attribute the entire success of the Kardashians, Jersey Shore, and any type of show like that to purely, well, we're saying it's important and it's popular, so therefore it is, and we've created celebrities. We've literally created celebrities out of scratch, not based on talent, not based on something they do, but based like purely from scratch. So in this world that we live in nowadays, if you listen to top 40 radio or anything that's in the major mainstream press, is that there is an extinction event that has been happening in music for a while, and a lot of people say the extinction event is rock or rock and roll. You know, everyone always says rock is dead, and it's a thing that happens over and over and over again. But really, is it rock that's dead? No, actually, I think it's a much deeper thing than that. And what's prevalent on the radio is it's not rock that's dead. The drummers have died. And there's a reason for it, and there's an explanation for it. And to me is very transparent as to why that's happening. So let's discuss. So nowadays, if you are a quote unquote musician, or let's step that back. If you are a songwriter, how do you go about writing a song nowadays? In the old days, so here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you how a song was written in the old days, you know, before my time, and into my time, and into where we are now. When a song was written originally, what happened was a songwriter would work out a basic structure of a song. The songwriter was generally, a guitar player, piano player, basically one of those types of instruments, either something on piano or piano-related instrument, or on guitar or guitar-related instrument. So, I mean, it could be a violin or whatever, some sort of stringed instrument. And basically what happened is they would come up with a basic core structure to the song. Now, it wasn't the entire structure of the song. It was the basic kernel of the song. They would take that in either to a studio, like basically we're going to go into the studio, record the song. Well, the song only has a piano part. Nothing else is worked out. There's no bass. There's nothing else worked out. But it's basically one instrument and what that one instrument does in the song. So what happens after that is once they're in the studio, that one riff or part or this part of the song structure that is played on the single instrument is developed into various other instruments. I mean, unless it's a piano ballad that just has a piano and a voice, you know, that's pretty straightforward. There's your song. But, I mean, in the big band era, you'd have a piano player come in, but then they're working out everything else. They're working out the horn section. They're working out, you know, all the various string instruments. You know, they're composing. Now, only true composers worked out the entire section of every piece. So when you're saying the tuba is going to play a part in the fourth bar, and it's going to play this sequence of notes, you're actually writing that down in notation format for the musician to play. And then you're going to say, okay, well, we had the oboe on this part, and then you're going to write out the notes what the oboe's playing at that part at the fifth bar of music. And then you're going to be writing out, so a true composer in those days, like a true composer even nowadays, is the person that actually puts all those parts together, puts the arrangement together. Here's the basic melody of the song, which is la 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 la, and that's it. And then they're going to work all the instruments around it and truly compose the song from front end to back end. So what happened later is, instead of being a composer, you ended up seeing a songwriter who would, in some cases, go into the studio and tell everybody what to play, or they would work in conjunction with session musicians to finish putting that song together. So they may have written a part on an acoustic guitar, and it's just a standard rhythm section, a standard rhythm part on the guitar, and that's what they've written. So they go into a studio, they work with the studio musicians, the studio drummer will come up with a beat to play against that, the studio bass player will come in and add a bass line to it, you may add some horns in there, so the horn guys are going to work together to work out something that fits in with that song, and eventually you have the song composed and performed on the album, and then that ends up being the final version of that song. But when that person was sitting on their couch putting it together, I mean, that was it, right? You just put it on the couch, put it together, goes to the studio, and then the people in the studio figure the song out. But in a lot of these cases, the session guys, I don't think, were credited with a songwriting credit. If someone writes a song, writes the initial kernel of the song and brings it into studio and works it out with those studio musicians, and they work out what the song is going to sound like together as a whole, I kind of think the songwriting credit should go to everyone, but it rarely does. So in later years, with the advent, and I'm gonna name drop here, and I apologize. Maybe I shouldn't. Maybe it's the wrong thing to do. Maybe I shouldn't be throwing rocks in a glass house. But artists such as Beyonce and Rihanna and all these people. And I'm sorry, I'm kind of lumping everybody into the same category, but it's basically the pop R&B sound that's out now. Is someone will come in with a song idea. It may just be a lyric. It won't be a guitar or, you know, the main rhythm part of the song. They'll come up with a vocal and then that's it. So then what happens is a bunch of studio musicians will write music, write the actual music, not the vocal, but write the music to fit around the vocal. And basically write all the music. Now, let's be clear. When you're writing a song, there's the song and there's the vocal. These are two different things. The vocal is the melody that the singer sings. The music is the are the instruments that are played by the musicians. So the vocal is distinct in that it is sung over top of the music, while the music itself is the music. This is how I view things, and maybe this is not the way it's viewed in the world, but the vocal is one thing, the music is another. And when you said you've written a song, you've either written the music and the vocal, or you've only written the music, or you've only written the vocal. To claim sole songwriting credit on something where you only wrote the vocal, I don't know. Now, in some cases, there's some singers that do not proficiently play any instrument other than their voice or their pipes, and what they do is they will go to the guitar player in their band, or they'll go into a session and get a session player and basically mouth off what they want. So their guitar part might be da 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 da. So the songwriter who does not play the instrument will go to the guitar player and ask them to play da 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 da, and then the guitar player will play it on the guitar, and the singer will go, no, it's got to be kind of in a different key, can you play it a little higher, and they'll go da 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 da, no, it's not quite right, maybe a little bit lower, da 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 da, okay, that's exactly it. Okay, if the singer has done that with the guitar player, I would say that they actually wrote that guitar part. Why? Well, because I've done this myself. So, what's happened here is when you're collaborating with someone else, you have an idea for a song and you're telling them what to play, you have written the song. If you are collaborating with someone and asking them to play a part over top, and you don't know how that part goes, you just want that person to figure it out, then no, you get a co-songwriting credit, and the person who actually worked out the guitar, drums, bass, horns, the winds section, if the person that came up with that part should get the songwriting credit for that portion of the song. So, all that being said, the way to record music has changed dramatically over the years. And with the advent of rock and roll, when rock and roll came to be, what ended up being established was standard drum beats, standard drum rhythms. So you get, you know, 4/4 time, you get your time signature, and then you're playing your snare on the one, and you're playing your bass drum on the three. And then on the next bar, it's the one and three again. Sorry about that, guys. Looks like someone's off to a fire. So anyway, if you're doing that, if it's a standard beat and you're saying, I want a standard beat, and you're playing a standard beat, the drummer very often doesn't get songwriting credit on songs. And the reasoning behind that in my head is because standard rock beats are standard rock beats. They're not... they're basically keeping the song going, but they're not, it's not an actual contribution to the song, it's just keeping the song going. I've been guilty of that many times in the past, where I don't think I would have given myself a songwriting credit when all I'm doing is, well, I'm going to play the same beat as this Kiss song, because that's, you know, that's how what I started playing with was Kiss songs. or in later years, well, I'm just going to take this beat from that Pixies song. If that's all you're doing, you're not really creating, you're just copying, and you're just emulating a beat that you've heard previously. So, in a lot of ways, drummers don't get songwriting credit, because really, you're just playing the same part over again. However, there are other drummers out there that you know, do write their own parts. The first one that comes to prominence for me, influential-wise, was Mitch Mitchell, who played drums for Jimi Hendrix. I discovered him later in my life, but I went back and listened to those parts, and those parts are intricately put together, and Ginger Baker is another one. Those are songwriters. Those drummers are songwriters. What they're doing is actually writing a drum beat to fit that song. They're not copying or replaying something they've used in 10 other songs. They're actually creating something new. Neil Peart, Rush, no two drum beats are the same. He's always doing something different. The fact that he can find such variation is truly astonishing. Matt Cameron of Soundgarden and Pearl Jam, same thing. Rarely plays the same beat twice. And he's always composing something new, or if he's using the same beat, he's using it just slightly differently, so it's different. No different than playing rock and roll and you only play three chords, right? So what's happened, because there are a lot of standard rock beats and time signatures, and the time signatures are, there's only like, you know, a small handful of time signatures in standard rock and roll. What you're seeing is that there's so many basics. So when you actually are a composer and you're trying to put a song together, you're going to go into your Pro Tools or your Reaper or whichever program you're using, and you're going to you're just going to grab a standard beat. You're not going to really put any thought into it. You're going to go in. You're going to pick the beat. You're going to lay that track down, so basically just drag and drop. You're going to throw it into track one, because now you got something to play your guitar or piano over, and then you're done. So the drum, that's how easy it is to do the drums nowadays. And unfortunately, it's a very lazy way to do it, but as a songwriter, I can understand the need to just, okay, well, here it is. So this is leading to... These factors are what's leading to the death of the modern drummer. There was a recent thing in the news with Dave Grohl put up this video of, okay, well, I'm leaving Foo Fighters. I don't need a drummer. I don't need a band anymore. I'm just going on my own. I'm going to be a solo guy. And the joke was, he goes in the studio and there's one button you can push, and you can write a song by pushing one button, and that's it. And that really got me thinking, and it's like, it is very true. Now, you can be creative. You can just use the standard beats that show up in your recording software and just pluck it in there. But I don't think you should. I really don't think you should. It's an easy way. If you're trying to get your song out there, and you're trying to get, trying to get it down, and you have a melody that you're trying to figure out, and you just need a beat to play it over so you can capture that. Yeah, quick songwriting is, use a standard beat in your recording software, drag and drop it into your software, and then, record yourself playing that guitar lick or the vocal melody or whatever. And then you have at least a placeholder for, okay, well, this is going to be the cadence to the song. It's going to help form the cadence of the vocal or the cadence of the guitar or piano or whichever instrument you're playing. And then you have it. There you go. But we've gotten lazy. It's just like, well, we're just going to use that. It's good enough. And for some reason with drums or the beat, however you want to call it, in a song, good enough is good enough. And it's gotten lazy. Here's the other part of the factor that comes in is, the band I'm in currently, we are in the studio right now, and one of the biggest challenge, other than actually writing the songs and learning the songs during the recording process, is actually just recording the drums. The most difficult thing to record. Why, do you ask? Well, if you don't know much about drums, I'm going to spell it out for you. When you record a guitar, you record the guitar from an amp. You have options here, but generally there's two different ways that I use. And one is you plug your guitar into the amp, you take a microphone, preferably a specialized microphone, you place that microphone against the head of the amp where the sound is coming out of. That microphone picks up the sound of the guitar through the amp, puts it through the microphone, and gets recorded into your computer, and then you have your guitar sound. Now, obviously, you wouldn't have the... Well, you might, but you wouldn't have the amp turned up to 11. You don't need to play it as loud. You're just trying to capture the tone of the amp. Although, during recording, you may choose to crank that amp because you like the sound it makes at a certain frequency or whatever. But nonetheless, it is as simple as that. Or taking your guitar, plugging it directly into your input for your computer, and recording directly. Bass, same thing. Any wood instrument, same thing. You're going to have a mic put up against your instrument, all your wind instruments, same thing. You can record it quite easily. Really, the trick later is just mixing it so everything sounds good together. But when you're talking about a drum isn't the sound isn't coming out of a single piece. It's coming out of multiple pieces. You're getting people with 5-piece drum kits, or 7-piece, or 12-piece, or 15-piece, or whatever. If you want to capture the absolute perfect sound of the drums, is you're going to want to have a mic on every single one of those pieces. And that doesn't even include your steel on there. That doesn't include your ride, or your crash, or your hi-hat. So those have to be mic'd as well. But while you're during the recording process, here's the challenge. Drums are loud. If you have a mic on your snare drum, and you hit that snare drum, that mic picks up that snare sound. However, the mic next to the snare drum, which is on your hi-hat or one of your toms, catches some of that as well. I mean, you can set your input as low as possible so it doesn't pick up anything else. So, for example, if you're trying to make sure that it's only going to pick up the snare, that's never going to happen. You're never going to have perfect capture of that snare. You're always going to get bleed in from all the other drums in the kit. So you never get a perfect sound. It's a very difficult thing. There's a whole science to doing it. For example, there's a lot of music studios. Once they figure out that exact perfect setup, they permanently place that drum kit in the studio with the mics, and they never move it again. If they record and they tour, they have a completely different drum set for touring. They do not use the same drum set. Because you don't want... That setup takes so long to do, and it's so difficult to do, that once you have it perfect, you don't want to move it and then go back to it again, because it takes forever to set it up again. So recording the drums, incredibly difficult. It's very difficult to capture a really good sound. And there's nothing really you can do about it. It's that difficult. So if you are a musician... and you don't have access to a studio or a studio drummer, and you really need to get that idea out, you can't afford to go in a studio and you just want to record this at home, I can see why people would leave that out. Well, you know what, we're not going to record drums, we're not going to use real drums, we're going to use something that's pre-programmed in a computer, and we're just going to go with that, and then that's it. I understand the thinking of it. But what I'm finding is you should still put time into the drum part as you would any of the other parts. When someone's working out that guitar and working out, okay, well, I'm going to change up sharp up here, then we're going to go with a D minor down here, and then we're going to switch it over, and then we're going to strum fast here, we're going to strum slow here. Like, you're actually working out all the every single particular of what that guitar is going to be doing. And then you might you do the same thing on the vocal. But a lot of times, what I'm finding by listening to Top 40 is that it goes as far as the vocal and that's it. There is nothing. You might get one instrument that is playing something that has some intricacy to it or some variation to it, and that generally be whatever is intended to be your guitar part or your piano part or your lead instrument part, and it's playing something. And then occasionally you'll get another instrument playing a part. So, in standard dance or top 40 or whatever, you have, generally what you have is you have a bass laying something out. Generally the bass might have the most variation, especially in a dance song. And then that's it. And then you might have another instrument, which might just be a sound. It could be weep, and it just repeats through the whole song. Weep, 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 through the whole song, and that's all it does. So as a quote-unquote secondary instrument, it's not really a secondary instrument. It's actually nothing. So what I'm finding is there's a general laziness. Let's get the product out. The vocal's good. No one listens to the other instruments anyway, which I have to admit, majority of people don't hear instruments. They just hear the vocal. They only care about the lyric. Sometimes the music could be so atrocious, the vocal is enough, and then that's it. So what happens is I'm listening to the radio, and I'm hearing songs that have one beat, beginning to end, verse, chorus, bridge, whatever, every single beat, exactly the same from front to end. I'm also hearing, a lot of times as a drummer, you use cymbals as accents or punctuations to a line. So you're not finding that in dance music. So a lot of that's gone. Alright. Someone's coming behind me here. Let's see if we can move to the side or something. So anyway, so the music nowadays, sorry, there was a little thing going on there. So anyway, so what I'm finding is that there's just a general laziness. Now, in dance music, there is some dance music or electronic music or whatever the hell you want to call it, where they're not using a drummer, they're using a drum machine. Sometimes they're using an electronic kit someone's playing, but regardless, what's happening is they're programming those beats in. That's the kind of music that I like. If it's going to be electronic, and your beat is going to be electronic in some way, shape, or form, if you're programming those beats and you're working it out and you want this section to have a little drum fill, then you want that section to have more oomph on the downbeat versus the upbeat or whatever, and you're actually going in there and programming that beat and actually taking the time to write the music, to actually write the drum music for that song, to me that's entertaining. So I don't have anything against electronic drums. I get bored if a song doesn't have enough going for it. A great lyric does not make a great song. It can be part of a great song, but it does not make a great song. And a hook does not make a great song, especially if you have a hook, and it's a short hook, and it repeats through the entire song, and then you sing over top of it, and nothing else. To me, that doesn't make a great song. It makes a lazy song, and it may be incredibly popular, but these are the types of songs that I find, they start big, they're incredible. incredibly huge right from the get-go. The hook is so catchy, or that vocal, whatever they're doing in that vocal, is so catchy that there's a hook within that vocal. Super, super catchy. There's nothing else in the song that's any good. It's just repetitive and there's nothing going on. And they're, you know, clearing way for that hook. But one, if you have to listen to that song 20, 30, 40, 50, 100, 1,000 times with any one-hit wonder, you're going to hear a song thousands of times because they play it everywhere. And it's anywhere you go when you go to a restaurant. And all it has is that one hook. That one hook is not enough to sustain the life of the song for me. I get, if people are going to hear a song, like the song, not get bored with the song, be able to continue listening to it 1,000 times, and they're discovering something about that song every time. Well, wait a minute, I don't know drums, but there's this weird thing that happens at the end of every fourth lyric. I don't know what that means, if that's a verse or chorus, but there's a little drum thing, and it goes that. Yeah, I really like that. You can go back and rediscover a song thousands of times, especially if it's a one-hit wonder, and you're going to listen to it a bunch of times. The true one-hit wonders that last forever are the ones that actually have something going on in the song. It's not... here's another way to look at it. Multifaceted songs. Most songs are single or dual-faceted, and that's it. A great song has multiple facets to it. So, the death of the modern drummer, you got a few reasons as to why it's happened. Laziness, cost, expense, equipment, and the ease of doing it another way. And the lack of knowing what beats are. Like, if you're going to program beats and you know nothing about percussion, you know, of course you're just going to use a standard beat. I understand that. But to me, if you want the song to be good, there should be a quote-unquote musician behind each of those instruments, even if it's the same guy or same girl. As long as there's something going on with each instrument, it actually makes it into a really great song. So, there's my 2 cents on that. Sorry for nerding out on music yet again, but it's something I kind of felt I wanted to talk about. And I guess that's it. We're going to sign off here. Wish you guys well. We'll talk to you soon on the flip side.